Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to the Dublin Story Slam podcast. The Dublin Story Slam is an open mic storytelling night that takes place every month in Dublin's Sugar Club. And each night, we invite members of the audience to get up and share true personal stories that are inspired by a different theme each night. At the end of the night, an overall winner is chosen by judges in the audience, and then they go on to compete for the title of Grand Slam Champion. But this podcast is all about celebrating stories that may not have necessarily won the Story Slam, but ones that we think are definitely worth sharing. So this is the Dublin Story Slam podcast. Over the holidays, we had time to press pause and reflect and to listen back basically to a bunch of stories. And we have some amazing stories lined up for you for 2019. But this episode features two stories that were told at our most recent Story Slam only last week on January 15th. The theme of that night was tribes, and we held it in association with First Fortnight as part of their unique and amazing arts festival that really is all about engaging people in conversation about mental health and using the arts to facilitate those conversations. So we were delighted to come back and take part, and the theme of the evening that we chose was tribes. Now, one of those stories deals directly with mental health, but the other is more about the tribe of family, of friends, of a network of people out there trying to do good. And then our final story is one that is sure to give you a bit of a giggle, a bit of a laugh. It's kind of the quintessential, you know, pub story. So if you've ever wondered what the inside of a US prison looks like from an Irishman's perspective, make sure to stick around. But first, we're going to start today's episode with a story from a lady called Jude McCarthy. Now, Jude is a interior designer, and she's only now, at age 45, recognizing the fact that she was suffering from depression. And so she tells this amazing story of getting help. And sometimes asking for help can be the biggest challenge of them all. Getting it is one thing, receiving it is another, but even just asking for it. So Jude brings us inside a psychiatric hospital and shows us the actual inner workings of what it's like, because on paper, on TV, in films, wherever you hear it, it's usually a very scary place and usually used as a last resort. And not a lot of people know what it's actually like to be in a psychiatric hospital getting treatment. So with that in mind, here is our very first storyteller from 2019. It's Jude McCarthy.
I sat in front of a lovely consultant who said to me, "I don't want to scare you, but you need to come into hospital and you need to come in now." 3 days later, I was standing in a line, cup of water in hand, waiting to be given my medication. The consultant was a psychiatrist and the hospital was a psychiatric one. I had been battling depression for 7 years, and it always worked well with a doctor and some counselling, and that was absolutely fine. But last year, the wheels came off completely, and no matter what I did, I could not get out of it. And I ended up in a place that I never thought I would be, in the darkest of places. So when she said to me I was going in to hospital, I had two kind of split feelings. It was, one was terror and the other one was relief. It was, thank God, somebody is going to help me. So in the 3 days before I went into the hospital, I was kind of in a complete daze. And because, A, my ignorance of inpatient psychiatric care in Ireland knew no bounds. I knew absolutely nothing. All I knew was I was going in there, and that was it. Thinking about it, I was thinking, this is like 19th century lunatic asylum, a bit of Girl Interrupted, and maybe One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So I was going in anyway, but this was what was in my head. So within about a minute of walking into the hospital, I knew I was going to be okay. Because the kindness that greeted me the minute I walked in that door, from there and when I walked out the door, was just unbelievable. So just to raise the veil for you a bit as to what goes on in a psychiatric hospital in the 21st century, you're basically given as much help as you need, all under one roof. So you had a psychiatrist, you had a psychologist, you had CBT therapy, OT, anything with a T at the end of it that had therapy, that's what you were getting. So you were bombarded with this, which was fantastic, and that's why you were in there. It was to get you better as quickly as possible, because if you're on the outside trying to get that help, you're talking about 18 months to 2 years trying to get better. So when I came out of the... I started to feel more like a human after a couple of weeks, I started to take notice of what was going on in here. And, you know, far from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, although we did have to queue for meds, and you did get it in the little container, and you did have to take it in front of the nurses, but there was no Jack Nicholson, but there was no Nurse Ratchets either. The nurses were unbelievable, and they were your touchstone, because you had them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So if you had a long, dark night of the soul, they were the people who were there for you. And I had some of the most amazing conversations of my lifetime with the nurses in the hospital. So it was quite amazing. And the other thing for me that really struck me was, when I got so bad and so low, I had stopped thinking that depression was an illness. And I was thinking I was doing this to myself. It was my fault. I was blaming myself. So this was not helping and putting me in a very good place. So when I'm standing there realizing there's 51 other people in here with depression, anxiety, or bipolar. Now, I know that sounds like it's an absolute hoot in there, but believe it or not, it worked. So for me, it was like, it actually isn't your fault. You're not making this up. It's real. There are doctors here. There are, like, as I said, 51 other people trying to deal with this evil, insidious, invisible illness. So that was the first thing. It was like, oh my God, I am not alone. With this isolating illness, there's a whole hospital full of people here, and we're all struggling with this, and we're all trying to do our very best. But the amazing thing is, it's like the first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club. I never had a conversation with any patient in there about depression. We talked about life, the universe, and everything. Because we had so many professionals to talk to, you didn't need to talk about it. And the other thing about it was, they knew. They knew exactly how you felt. I could tell by looking at someone what kind of day they were having. And we had our meals, 3 meals a day, in the main dining room. So if you saw that someone was missing for a day or 2 days, you knew they were in trouble. They were having a bad time because they were having their meals in their room. And because one of the things they always ask you is to have your meals with everyone. And that's how you meet everyone, because every day you sit somewhere else, you meet someone else, and there's a great feeling of support within that. So if I saw someone was missing, depending on how well I knew them, the next time I'd see them, it would either be a nod of, I know, or, are you okay now? That was about it. So, but the support was there. You knew the support was there. And as I said, you did not have to explain, because we had all been there. Now, the other thing you get in there is a timetable. But in the middle of the timetable, and I remember seeing this so clearly, it was Wednesday, 2 o'clock, by referral only, psychotherapy group. And I remember seeing it going, God help the people who have to go to that. They are in serious trouble. So, of course, I had to go to the psychotherapy group. But it was in here that it was a real life changer for me in many ways. there was a maximum of 5 people. So it's, as you see on TV, circle of chairs, everyone sitting around, my name is, blah. But you knew all these people because you'd been meeting them for weeks and just having the general chat. But in there, it's where you had to dig deep and you had to talk about things you really didn't want to talk about. You had to face up to things that you'd really rather not. But the power of the people in the room gave you the bravery to talk about these things. And I heard stories that I really would rather not have heard. Awful stories. But what I took away from it was not the awful story. What I took away from it was the bravery, the resilience of these people. How they got up every day and went about their business, carrying the weight of some of these stories on them, just inspired me. I just thought it was amazing. And suddenly I looked around. I also heard people describing feelings that I've had. I heard them describe thoughts that I had also had. And I sat there and I was in awe. And I looked at them and I said, these people are my tribe. They are my tribe. And we are battling this invisible, insidious illness that nobody wants to talk about, that's under the carpet. And I just thought, Jesus, we're great. And why I wanted to stand here tonight, because it is first fortnight, and I wanted to say, to hell with stigma. My name is Jude. I spent 2 months in a psychiatric hospital, and I found my tribe, and we are amazing.
That was Jude McCarthy with a brilliant and very brave story kickstarting off the episode. Jude emailed us about the story afterwards, and when we were talking, she said that hospitalization was never on my radar, probably because it sat there like stigma personified. So on leaving, I wanted to let people know that there is amazing help out there, and feck the stigma. I think that should be the new motto for all mental health issues in Ireland, is feck the stigma. And if you have been affected by any of the issues in the story, or you want to find out how you yourself can seek help or maybe refer it to somebody, head over to the firstfortnight.ie website. It's a brilliant resource, as well as being a guide to the festival, which keeps going on until the end of January. So a really, really brilliant way to kickstart off our year. Our next story is also from the same night, and it is from Mary Kate O'Flanagan. Now, Mary Kate is no stranger to telling stories in Dublin. She is a screenwriter, and when we were the Moth, she was actually the very first Grand Slam champion of the Moth here in Dublin back in 2015, I think it was. But what I love about this particular story was that Mary Kate was on a deadline. But she said when she heard the theme that she just had to get out and tell the story, even though she really didn't have the time. So she popped on her bicycle, cycled down to the Sugar Club, got up on stage, delivered this amazing story, and then came up at the halfway point and said, listen, guys, I'm really sorry, but I gotta go. I have this deadline. And then she ended up winning the actual Story Slam with this story. So unfortunately, Mary Kate wasn't there to actually receive her little certificate and get her applause, but we did send her a recording of a big shout out to her. So hopefully that did make up for it. So the story you're about to hear is about a Carlos, as Carlos is not his real name, is all I'll say at the beginning. And afterwards, we're going to actually speak with Mary Kate to learn a little bit more about some of the characters in her story. But for now, this is Mary Kate O'Flanagan.
So a couple of years ago, I'm watching the news with my mother. We're watching about the refugee crisis, and she looks at me and she goes, I don't know why you don't go and volunteer to help. I don't know what's holding you back. And in my head, I heard, it's not like you have a husband or children. My mother's too lovely to ever say that, but my crazy head says it. But then I thought, she's right. So I went and I called my friend Audrey, who lives in Paris and was volunteering in the camps in Calais, and she put me in touch with the organisation, and I went with my best friend Jean. We spent a week there. It was unbelievable, all these tribes of people, and to see the extraordinary dignity and kindness and joy even that you could see with these people going through the worst days of their lives. But I met this kid, Carlos. He'd just turned 16. He's from Sudan. He hadn't seen his family for 9 years. He knew his mother was dead. He didn't know what had become the rest of his family. And he was trying every night on the trucks to get to the UK, even though he didn't know anyone there either. And he really touched my heart. And I noticed one time most of our job was picking up shit, literally. But sometimes we could bunk off and give English lessons just in some ramshackle kind of space that we called a school. And I'd meet Carlos there and try and help him. He had almost no English. But I noticed one day his shoes were falling apart. And I said, "Do you need a better pair of shoes?" And he said, "Yes." And he gave me his shoe size. And he stood up to show me that his jeans were held together by a piece of string. So I got him some boots and a belt and some T-shirt and socks. And after I gave them to him, he was, you know, practicing his English in his notebook, but he pushed it over to me and it said in it, "I will never forget you." And I held his hand for a minute and I thought, this is why I came here, like, so that he knows, so that these people know that not all Europeans fear them and hate them. But I had to leave after a while and it was really hard to go. And the only way I could go was I said, "I'll come back again." That was beginning of September. So I'll come back again the end of October. And I made my plans to do that. But then I got a call from Autry to say, "Don't come. They're bulldozing the camp." And I don't know if you remember it from the news, but they bulldozed the camp in Calais and they left behind the kids. So there were 2,000 unaccompanied minors. The Guardian said it's like the Lord of the Flies there. And I knew that Carlos was one of them. So I rang Audrey and I was like, "I have to come back. I have to find Carlos." And she was like, "You can't. They're only letting on 30 volunteers a day, like the most hardened and experienced, which let's agree you're not, to bring food and water to the kids." And I said, "Well, I'd like to see them try to stop me." And she said, "Yeah, I got two words for you. Tear gas," because we had been tear gassed before. The French security forces were quite liberal with their use of tear gas. So I said, "Well, I'm going to come and I'm going to find him." And she went, "And then what? Then what are you going to do?" And she said, "Mary Kate, you're in an absolute state. And if you come, you're going to need help. You're not going to be any help." And I knew she was right. And I heard of a group that was organising a candlelit vigil outside the door to say, "Could Ireland help some of these unaccompanied minors?" And I joined that, even though it seemed really feeble. And then amazingly, Catherine Zappone, TD, and another woman passed a bill in the Dáil to say that Ireland would take 10% of those minors, 200 kids. And I was like, this is it. And I was able to contact Carlos through other refugees who had phones. And I was like, "Would you come to Ireland if we could get you there?" And the answer came back, "Yes, I would." And then the kids were all moved from Calais to different camps around France. And he was sent to Biscarrosse in the south, went to France, but he was given a phone. So now we were in daily contact. And I was like, "Okay, stay there. I'm going to try and get you to Ireland." And I started doorstopping TDs and ministers going, "Who's got the list? Who's making the list? How do I get this kid's name on the list?" And I just got bounced around from one department to another and nobody could help me. And it was coming on Christmas now, and I said to Carlos, "I'll come see you in Biscarrosse." And he said, "Would you bring me a pair of shoes? Because my shoes got lost when I was leaving at Calais." And I said, "Of course I will." But I wrote to the head of the camp at Biscarrosse, said, "I'm coming to see this kid." And I got a call from a policewoman at the prefecture near Biscarrosse, and she said, "You may not have permission to come and see him." And I was like, "Can I come even for an hour?" And she said, "No." And I didn't know what to do. And I begged her to ask her boss, and she called me back, and I was having dinner with my friend Morris that night, a couple of days before Christmas, and she said, "Look, I've asked my boss, and there's no way. We can't give you permission to see this kid." And I said, "Okay." And I said, "Will you go and find him and tell him it was your decision, not mine, because I made him a promise, and you're making me break it." And she said, "I will." And then I called Carlos to tell him, "Don't expect me tomorrow." And he said, "Okay, you did your best. I'm going to leave this camp. They treat us terribly here. I'm going to go back to Calais and sleep in the ditches and try and get on the trucks to the UK. And I said, "Do not do that. There is still a chance you can get to Ireland." And he said, "Well, look, I know you've tried and I know you mean well, but you obviously can't help me." And I said, "Carlos, don't do it. You'll break my heart." And he was crying. I was crying. Morris was having a marvellous night. But when I got off the phone and wiped my eyes, Morris said, "Okay, look, this has been your crazy deal, so I haven't wanted to get involved with it. But I actually know somebody who works with the unaccompanied minors in Ireland, and he might know something about this." So he put me in touch with this guy, and the next day this guy took time out of his busy day to talk to me, and he said, "Look, Mary-Kate, here's what happened. the politicians passed a bill, the civil servants will mess around with it between Ireland and France until those kids are all 18. And then they'll be, you know, we'll say, oh, well, we tried. And I said, okay, thanks. And at that stage, people started saying to me, well, what if you even got him here? Like, how would you take care of him? And I was like, yeah, you're right. My mother's right. I should have had a husband and children so I'd have a family home and I could take care of him. I'm such an idiot. And then my friend Mary rang me and she said, your sister Sarah has told me about this kid that you met in Calais. Mary Kate, we'll take him. We already applied to be foster parents to a teenager. And I said, would you really? And she said, 100%, we would love to. Find the right authorities and tell them there's a home waiting for him. And I thought, I've made all the right choices in my life because that woman is a member of my tribe and she stepped up. And then the next day, the guy who works with unaccompanied minors called me back and he went, Mary Kate, I was completely wrong. We are going to get those 200 kids here and we're going to get them here really soon. And I've been put in charge of the mission. And my French counterpart just got in touch with me and he said, okay, so we're going to send you 200 kids. I'll draw up a list of names, of 200 names. And Thomas said, no, 199. I've got one name already. And in March 13th, I wish it was March 17th, but it wasn't. On March 13th in 2017, Carlos came here. And a few months later, he went to live with Mary and her family. And he goes to school now. He calls me Auntie. And his English has got immeasurably better. And I said to him, a lot of his friends did end up going to the UK. I said to him, you know, if when you're older you wanted to go to the UK, that would still be a possibility. You could do that. And he said, no. He said, the UK didn't want me. Ireland wanted me. I will be an Irishman. And with that, my tribe got bigger by one person, but infinitely richer and more beautiful and more dear to me. Thank you.
That was Mary Kate O'Flanagan, who was the winner of the very first Story Slam of 2019. And she'll go on to compete with seven other Story Slam winners at our Grand Slam Championship, which takes place at the end of this year. But afterwards, we got talking to Mary Kate and just to let her know that she'd actually won. And she asked us to, I suppose, help her with something, really. And not so much help her, but, you know, try and help some of the people who are affected by some of the issues that she raised in the story. So I asked, first of all, about Mary Kate by saying, as amazing as her story was, and I suppose the role that she played in it, what could an average Joe, a person on the street, do to help people like her?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
What's happened now is that the people that we took from Calais
will become Irish citizens, and they're in the care of Tuisla until they're 21. But many of them who were 16, 17 a year or two ago are now 18, 19, and they're ready to move on to the next phase of their lives. But Tuisla can't move them out of the group homes because the rents in Dublin have skyrocketed. And what that means is there's a little bottleneck, and we can't bring over the next wave of 14, 15 and 16 year olds because there's no place for them in the group homes. So what Tuisla are looking for are people who might have a spare room. And it's not a caring situation, although if anybody wants to be a foster carer to a former refugee, that's very rewarding and a lovely experience, as Mary could tell you. But they really are looking for landlords or, you know, somebody who can rent a room to a lodger. And the kids are, you can imagine, pretty independent. You know, they've been fending for themselves in way more difficult situations. So they all cook really well. They all, I've never met one that didn't keep his room like a barrack room, because they're so happy to have a space of their own and they take good care of their belongings. And they just need somewhere to live while they move on to work or more study. And those places are proving impossible to find. So if there's anyone out there that has a spare room, it's like I say, I can't emphasize enough, it's not a foster caring situation, it's just a landlord lodger situation. Hopefully you would get on well with whoever you share your home with, but they could get in touch with Tuisla.
And you can find those details if you head over to our website, www.thedublinstoryslam.com, and we'll post an email address and a phone number in which you can get in contact if you do have maybe a spare room, or alternatively, if you know somebody who has a spare room, because that's just as important as just sharing that message. So thanks a million to Mary Kate, and hopefully we'll see her back at the Story Slam.
How is Carlos doing today?
Do you know, he is in the most fantastic school in Waterford. When we went to buy him his first school uniform, the young man who was helping us in the shop was like, oh, I go to that school. And Carlos was going into transition year. This guy was going into sixth year. But he was like, oh, I know that group of lads. They're great. He's really going to fit in well. And while Carlos was changing, I said to this young man, you know, it's not just his first time at this school. It's his first time at our school. And he was like, don't worry, I'll be looking out for him on the first day, you know, and he's going to really fit in. He's going to have a great time. And Mary and I left the shop going, well, if that young man is the product of that school, Carlos is going to be just fine.
Mary Kate O'Flanagan. We've got one more story for you. And I hate to use that old time-worn cliche, but now for something completely different. So, Ray Fitzsimons is a storyteller who came to us, who is one of those accidental storytellers on the night that sometimes happens at the Dublin Story Slam. So Ray was there doing a video because he is doing a documentary on storytelling in Ireland for the Arts Council. And he came along and asked, look, can I come along and, you know, meet some of the storytellers, do a little interview, whatever, capture some of the magic on the night. We said, no problem. Then something weird happened. We were kind of running a little bit low on names in the hat. So I said to Ray, Ray, sure, you wouldn't maybe pop your own name in the hat. And so completely out of nowhere, he said that he had never really told this story before. He got up on stage. He was the last person, last name out of the hat, and delivered this absolutely ripping, brilliant, larger than life story of his adventures in the US. So this is Ray Fitzsimons.
In 1997, I went over to America, not like to make a million, but just sort of, because I got sort of shot out the other end of the rave scene and just wanted to leave. An adventure, you know. So I flew into New York and pretended I was a carpenter and got fired immediately, and the second job I lasted a little bit longer, and by the third job I was actually a carpenter. I don't know how that happened. It's a true story. I stayed in New York 2 years, and then I went over to Chicago for about 6 months. I had an uncle there. He slave labored me for a while, and then I shot over to San Francisco, and I liked that town as well, but it was another big American city, and I didn't want to see another one of them. So I ended up going to a place called Tucson, Arizona. because I was going to go through South America and round the world that way, right? So I arrive in Tucson in the middle of the summer, 110 degrees. What the fuck did I just do? And then I got a job on a building site and completely fried. Okay, so I'm living there and Arizona's great, but I'm thinking it's time to go. But then I meet a woman, as you tend to do, and she was absolutely amazing. And we went out for 3 years. So I'm 3 years later, I'm still in Arizona. And then we break up as these things happen. And I went on the beer. later on that night, about 4 a.m, I'm heading through a supermarket and I trip over a cardboard box and I get into an argument with the manager. And 5 minutes later, I'm in the back of a SWAT car. And I spend the night in jail. No, but before I went to jail, actually, in the place before you go to jail, like the station or whatever, I says, what's going to happen? This is, look, it's misdemeanor. We'll be done with you, you know, a night in jail, you'll be grand. And then they went, oh, no, this guy's got an INS hold. And I says, what does that mean? And I knew. I was completely illegal. I'd been there for 6 years and working and driving, and it was mad. But now I was caught. And I says, what's going to happen? This is, well, you're going to go to Florence, Arizona. In the morning, I was picked up by a van and I was driven into the middle of the desert to a place called Florence, Arizona, which was a concentration camp basically built to house the Japanese during World War II. And now it has been used as a detention center for mostly South American drug dealers. No, ordinary South Americans as well, but a lot of drug dealers, a lot of killers, a lot of people from that spent 25 years in prison, tattoos on their faces. But they were separated from me because I was in blue overalls. I was a nice guy. I'm from Kinalekleck, you know, never been in trouble in my life. That's in Cavan, by the way. Never been in trouble, and here I am now in blue overalls, and there's guys in orange overalls. They're the violent offenders and the drug dealers, and then the guys in the red, as I said, are the murderers, right? But we're separated. I can only be in contact with the orange guys. The orange guys can be in contact with the red. Anyway, after breakfast the first morning, you go out to the yard. You have 2 hours in the yard. I'm out in the yard, and there's the only other white guy there was this guy called Sinka. Sinka was a Latvian national. He was 78 at the time or something. But anyway, he seen me, but before I got into our conversation, he was actually an American war hero. He'd fought in two wars and was decorated. And it was by a bureaucratic mess he ended up, after running drugs across the border, after doing his time for that, he actually was, they were going to send him back to Latvia. And he said to me, where are you from? I says, Ireland. He goes, oh, you're not South American. I hate South Americans. Do you want a job? Which is, and I goes, a job? And he goes, yeah, can you cut hair? I says, I can. He says, after lunch, you go in, you fill out a requisition form. You say, I'm a barber on the outside and I'd like to cut hair and, you know, and spend my time productively inside. I did. And after breakfast the next morning, Ray Fizzymuzz, Fitzsimons, you idiot. You're wanted out in the yard. So I go out to the yard, and next thing you know, there I am with this war hero who's now really respected by the guards because they know his story. He's like, do you want a donut? Guard, get him a donut. And I'm like going, hey, man, things are looking up. So I'm in the yard. What we do is basically clean up all the fag butts and water the grass, hand out footballs and chessboards. As each pod gets their time out in the yard, we spent the whole day out there. It was kind of cool. But I got to know who everybody was, all the guys with the tattoos and the, you know, some guys were in there for money laundering and they tell me how to money launder. That was kind of weird. Other guys would make crystal meth and I know how to do that. anyway, a couple of days go by and next thing you know, I look over and it's like, hey, and myself and an Iraqi guy who was out there as well, look over and there's two A-frames coming rolling towards us and I says, what's that, Sinka? And Sinka goes, today you work. I'm like going, oh, fuck yeah, completely forgot about the hairdressing. Next thing you know, they pull off the thing and there's no scissors allowed in the, you can imagine, you know, with the... So two chairs are put out and the Iraqi guy gets one chair and he's actually a barber. I get my chair and I'm copying him. I'm like, you know. And in the meantime, like cattle coming in for feed I've got 50 South American, ranging from really nice lads to killers, looking at me, getting excited, because it's their day to get their hair cut. I start to shake. As you can imagine, I put down in the chair and I look over at the Iraqi guy and he's like, I'm like, holy fuck. And who comes walking towards the chair? Only the most violent guy in the place. He's got four tattoos. He shot four black guys in New York in 1982 over some drug deal gone wrong. And he comes up to me and he goes, hey, hombre, next week I go back to my country and I see my family for the first time in 25 years. Okay. I want a one, a two, a three, and at the top I want to go pow. I was like, yeah, have a seat there, yeah. Iraqi guy's like going, ah, you're screwed now. And I'm like, I swear to God, with the hair buzzers, you know, you're supposed to go, I was like cutting one hair at a time. Yeah, that one's okay. Yeah, that's okay. About a half an hour later, I finally have the balls to say to him, I'm finished. He gets up and he grabs the metal mirror, because there's, you know, like glass in the thing. And he's like, oh. And he turns around and he literally grabs my head. He goes, hombre, amigo, you spend extra time on me, man. Thank you so much. And he kissed me. Mwah, mwah. Suddenly, the terror had just transcended into a type of terror that sort of becomes no terror. As he walked off, I goes, next! And this poor little skinny Mexican sits in front of me with a lovely head of hair. And I was like, wee, 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 wee. And I looked over at the Iraqi guy and he goes, yeah, this is fun! Get off the chair. Next! A month and a half later, I eventually got my flight home to Ireland. It took a minimum of a month and a half. And I arrived home in my hometown, and I'm walking. And I don't tell the story. This is actually one of the first times I've ever, you know, told the story. And I'm wondering what to do with myself, you know. And I'm walking on Main Street, and I actually pass a window, and I'm looking, and it says, help wanted. And I looked up, it was a barber shop. And I went, nah. I hate to spoil the memory. Thanks very much.
That was Ray Fitzsimons finishing off our very first podcast for 2019. And if you haven't already, make sure to go back and listen to some of our other episodes from 2018. Our next Story Slam is on February 12th. The theme is a rather saucy one. It's sex. So if you have a story that you would like to share to us, it could be the literal translation of the word sex, or it could be all about gender. Head over to the website to find out more information. And we'll be back next month with three brand new stories for you. So thanks a million for listening, and we'll talk to you next month. Have a great one. Bye.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.